Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Shared Prosperity in a Fractured World, A New Economics for the Middle Class. The Global Poor and Our Climate is a work of political economy by Danny Roderick that argues current policy models are too fragmented to address climate change, democratic erosion, and persistent global poverty at the same time. Rather than treating these as separate problems, the book presents them as linked symptoms of a deeper structural shift in the world economy. Roderick's purpose is to outline a more realistic policy agenda for a post-hyperglobalization era, one that preserves democratic choice, supports broad-based prosperity, and accelerates the green transition. The book is especially concerned with how governments can act when global cooperation is weak or politically unavailable. It emphasizes local experimentation, industrial policy, and collaborative public-private action as practical tools for creating decent jobs and improving productivity. In that sense, the book is both a critique of older economic orthodoxy and a proposal for a more pragmatic, interventionist framework. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the trilemma linking democracy, prosperity, and sustainability. A central idea in the book is that democracy, economic prosperity, and environmental sustainability cannot be treated as independent objectives. Roderick argues that policies designed to maximize one of them often impose costs on the others, especially when governments rely on overly narrow market logic or globally standardized rules. This trilemma helps explain why familiar solutions have fallen short. Growth strategies can deepen inequality, climate policy can appear politically infeasible, and democratic systems can weaken when citizens experience economic insecurity. The book's value lies in showing that these tensions are not accidental policy failures, but structural trade-offs that must be managed explicitly. Roderick does not suggest that all three goals are impossible together. Instead, he argues that they require new institutions and a different economic imagination. By framing the challenge this way, the book shifts the discussion away from one-dimensional performance metrics and toward durable compromises that preserve political legitimacy while still producing material progress and lower emissions. Secondly, why hyperglobalization weakened the policy space of governments. The book gives a sustained critique of hyperglobalization, meaning a version of global integration that privileges unrestricted trade and capital mobility, while limiting the ability of governments to pursue their own social and developmental priorities. Roderick's argument is not anti-trade in a simple sense. Rather, he contends that the previous model demanded too much policy convergence and treated national autonomy as a problem instead of a legitimate democratic choice. This matters because states need room to respond to different levels of development, social conflict, and environmental capacity. When external rules become too rigid, governments lose the flexibility needed for industrial policy, labor market support, climate action, and development strategy. Roderick's alternative is not isolation, but a more selective and politically grounded form of globalization, one that recognizes that economies serve societies, not the other way around. The book, therefore, recasts globalization as something that should be judged by its compatibility with domestic political needs, not by abstract efficiency alone. Thirdly, productivism as a new economic logic beyond output fetishism, Roderick introduces productivism as a guiding principle for economic policy. The key point is that the aim of policy should not be growth in output for its own sake, but improvements in productivity that raise living standards without depending on ever-expanding resource use or labor displacement. This distinction matters because much conventional growth policy is built on the assumption that more output automatically means more welfare. Roderick argues instead that the quality and distribution of growth are what matter, especially in a world constrained by climate limits and political backlash against inequality. Productivism makes policy evaluation more concrete. Governments should ask whether investment, technology, and industrial support actually improve the productive capacity of workers and firms, especially in sectors that can absorb labor and raise middle-class incomes. The concept also provides a bridge between climate policy and social policy, since greener production and stronger labor productivity can be pursued together. In this sense, productivism is the book's attempt to replace old growth metrics with a more socially useful standard of success. Fourthly, services-led development as the main route for poor countries. A distinctive argument in the book is that manufacturing can no longer be treated as the universal engine of development. Roderick points to automation, robotics, software, and the carbon intensity of industrial production as reasons the old export manufacturing path is less reliable than it once was. Instead, he emphasizes the development potential of services, especially labor-absorbing services that can raise productivity without requiring mass industrialization. This is a major departure from older development advice, which often assumed that poor countries should first build manufacturing capacity and then move on to services later. Roderick argues that many countries can now create better jobs by shifting workers out of low-productivity agriculture into higher-productivity services supported by training, local investment, and institutional support. This does not mean all services are equal. The key is to improve productivity in sectors that can employ large numbers of less skilled workers. The book's practical message for developing countries is that development policy must be updated to match technological change rather than repeat a historical pattern that may no longer be available. Lastly, local climate action and public-private collaboration as practical governance. The book is notable for its emphasis on decentralized solutions. Roderick argues that waiting for comprehensive global agreements can delay action, especially on climate change, where geopolitical rivalry and competing national interests often make universal coordination difficult. Instead, he favors unilateral and regional measures, policy experimentation, and local coalitions that can move faster and respond better to real incentives. This approach extends beyond climate policy. He also sees collaborative public-private action as essential for building green industries, improving service sector productivity, and supporting middle-class employment. The state is not replaced by markets in this framework. Rather, the state helps coordinate, direct, and de-risk investments that private actors alone will not make. What makes this approach important is its realism. It accepts political fragmentation and works within it. Roderick is not offering a perfect blueprint, but a governable strategy for a divided world. By combining pragmatic industrial policy with local experimentation, the book argues that meaningful progress is still possible even when multilateral consensus is weak. In conclusion, this book should be read by policymakers, economists, development specialists, climate policy analysts, business leaders, and general readers who want a serious alternative to both laissez-faire globalization and purely rhetorical calls for cooperation. Its main benefit is not that it offers a single grand solution, but that it reorganizes several major debates into one workable framework. Readers come away with a clearer understanding of why climate action, democratic stability, and poverty reduction cannot be solved in isolation, and why economic policy must be judged by its effect on real institutions and real workers. The book also stands out because it is unusually pragmatic for a work of big-picture political economy, instead of repeating familiar arguments about free trade or protectionism. It focuses on what governments can actually do to support productivity in services, strengthen the middle class, and use local policy experimentation to accelerate transition. Compared with many books on globalization or climate change, it is more grounded in policy design and less dependent on ideal conditions. That makes it especially useful for readers looking for a realistic agenda in a fragmented world. If you would like to support Danny Roderick, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.